it's going.
Will Hoffacker on the air.
That is the sound of the start of another episode of the Young Cast. This is episode 24?
Yes.
Yeah, 24. And I am Will, and sitting with me here is...
Dana.
And Liz.
And Liz. Welcome, Liz.
Hi, Liz.
Hey, guys. Glad to be with you today.
Glad you're here.
What is today? Today, it's still summer, and we're recording...
It's July 30th.
We're recording on July 30th.
It's a Friday. It's about 7 o'clock. Approximately 80-something degrees.
Blue skies.
Do-do-do-do. Hoffack weather.
That reminds me, have I told you about the potential for a theme song?
Isn't Ian doing one?
Yeah, I asked Ian to do it, and he said that he was interested in doing it, but he hasn't really gotten back to me beyond that.
Can I do the theme song and it just be going do 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 for like every subsection? I'll do a whole bunch for you.
Sure. That sounds great. You're doing more right now than Ian has done so far.
Ian, I shake my fist at you.
The perplexing paradox about having this conversation is that I haven't been releasing these podcasts as we've been recording them. I've been delaying that, and I'm really hopeful by the time that anyone hears this posted on the internet, I will have that theme song, which we are talking about not having. And I hope you will have heard it like almost 5 times by now.
So listeners out there, if you heard some guitar or piano or something, it was Ian who won this battle. If you heard me going do 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 do, then it was me. If you heard some weird mixture, only the future can tell what happened.
So yeah, if he has come through with that theme song, then thank you and good work, Ian. And if he never comes through with it, great work, jackass. See if I ever trust you again.
Unreliable.
So, you had something you wanted to talk about, right?
Well, folks, I want to tell you a story. This is a story about my 10th grade honors English teacher, whose name I'm realizing I'm not going to mention. God forbid it ever get back to her. This will be on the internet.
Mrs. Initial.
C. Mrs. C. Anyone who goes to my high school will be able to figure out who this is. I was talking about this because I have a friend who was duped into thinking that his girlfriend at the time was allergic to latex. She was not, and she now has a child. Sorry, I'm talking towards the microphone like the microphone is the audience.
It's okay, sometimes I do that too when really we should just be looking at each other.
But it looks like a person, it looks like a weird little alien.
Yeah, it looks like a monkey, I think.
Can we make a face for it?
Oh, absolutely. That's a great idea.
Or maybe just like a picture, we can print out a picture of a crowd and just put it over.
All smiling.
All naked.
Yeah, that too. In their underwear.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the story. So, Mrs. C was my teacher for Honors English. She was also the director of the plays. And also one of my advisors for creative independent study my senior year of high school, where I basically threw pots or whatever I wanted.
You threw pots?
Not at the wall. Like, I made pottery on a spinning wheel.
Okay, is that called throwing?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I thought you were making a joke.
I thought you were just talking about throwing pots.
No, that was my art that year, was just throwing pots at the wall. Okay. The district was totally fine with white.
I knew you did pottery at the time. I just never knew the term.
What I did in that class is everyone thought I was going to use that class to write, because I wanted to take creative writing.
Yes.
That's for you, Randy Robertson. I was going to take creative writing again as a, what's it called when you take a class for not credit?
Elective?
No. You can get credits for electives. It's this word that starts with A. Not adjunct.
Onomatopoeia starts with O.
Anonymous.
When you take a class... whatever. I wanted to take it for without credit. It's a word that starts with an A.
Arc reactor.
No. And so they wouldn't let me do that. They were like, why don't you take in creative independent study? And I'm like, fine, whatever. So I did. And then I was like, I'm not going to write in this class. I can write whenever I want. I'm going to, because the whole point of me wanting to take the class was that I would get feedback, and I would not have gotten feedback in this class. And so I was like, I'm going to do all the artsy stuff I never got a chance to because I didn't have the time to. So I made a plaster mold or a mold and then made plaster ducks out of it. And I also, for the second half of the year, just threw pots all the time, and it was awesome.
It's still a funny phrase.
On a pottery wheel, not a spinning wheel. I said that incorrectly. A spinning wheel, though a pottery wheel does spin, a spinning wheel is used to make yarn. I've also done that. So for some reason, I was also making little zines at that time. If you don't know what that is, just look it up on Wikipedia. And, they were called This Is About Me because I thought they were, like, I thought it was really sort of selfish that people were writing what are known as personal zines, which are just about yourself. They're basically, like, live journal entries that people put a lot more effort into.
Uh-huh.
And so I was writing them, and I was trying to be really, like, I realize now I was writing a sort of shallow memoir. Yeah. And I said something about condoms or something, and she goes, starts telling me this story, and she goes, well, I recently found out that I'm allergic to latex. And I was like, oh my god, this is not going where it's going. She found out at a doctor's office. And she goes, because, you know, I don't have any other form of birth control right now. I'm not going to, you know, take the pill. I'm like 50-something. And I was like, oh no, please stop. Please stop. And she goes, so, because, you know, every time, you know, my husband and I would do it, it would be like red and inflamed and really terrible and painful. And you have to realize, Mrs. C is a lovely woman. She was a really amazing honors English teacher, pretty good play director. Should not have been sharing this with me, no matter how old I was. I was 18 at the time. Jeez, I was still in high school. And I said to her, like, oh, yeah? And she's like, yeah, so I went to the doctor. Turns out I'm allergic to latex. And I'm like, oh, that sucks. And so she then tells me, oh, but you can get polyurethane condoms. They're just a little bit more expensive, but, you know, you just order them online. Everything works fine now. And I'm like, oh, God.
Sounds like a success story.
No.
On, like, one of those infomercials late at night.
Yeah, like, success. Oh, it was just terrible. Ironically enough, about 2 years later, after I had left, it was, she divorced her husband, or her husband divorced her. They became divorced. And she started sleeping with one of the very rotund biology teachers at the school.
Nice use of the word rotund.
This man literally looked like an egg.
Well, did he bear any resemblance to the microphone?
Yes. Except, well, he didn't have such skinny legs. He literally was like, really, like, sort of narrower at the top where his neck was, and it just went down.
Was he
was, like little legs. He was short, too.
He
looked like Humpty Dumpty.
Was he pear-shaped, or was it just, like, not even a
pear? Pear sounds attractive to me. Like,
really?
When I found out that she was with this man, I was like, it's like the latex story all over again. Like,
there's just too much roundness for a pair here.
And the way that I found this out was, she is known for her drinking. She has a Christmas party every year in which she gets rather drunk. And not that she drinks otherwise, I don't think she's an alcoholic, but I guess she was at some sort of faculty party and told one of my friend's parents that, you know, it really sucked that she was getting divorced, but she was with an older man, and then revealed that this older man was this very rotund biology teacher, and it was just
Mr. Dumpty.
Yeah, Mr. Dumpty, and it was just all, ugh. I mean, that was a nice, he was a very nice man, but, oh, such a strange situation. Oh, very uncomfortable. Did not ever need to know any of that. And that is why I'm sharing it with you.
I can only imagine. Thank you for using this as a sort of, not only center for anecdotes, but a kind of therapy. That's a great introduction to you for anyone listening.
Podcasts are so different when Liz is.
I have been have been quoted, not quoted, I have been described to other people as saying that I have told the story of how I've lost my virginity within the first 2 days of meeting someone. I think that's sort of an exaggeration, but sort of accurate.
So you're Liz. You're also a creative writing major.
Yes, sir.
At something university.
SU.
SU, as we're calling it. You are 1 year above me and Dana.
Yes.
Unlike our last guest, Sarah, who was 1 year below me and Dana.
It's like a whole ladder of
grades. We don't like hanging out with people who are the same age as us.
Except each other, I guess.
Yeah. Right. You're the one exception.
Yeah, two is enough.
But you're not even my age.
Well, yeah, that's true. I'm dating an older woman because you are about 6 months older than I am.
Yeah.
And right now you're 21, and right now I'm 20.
Yes, you're such a youngling.
And this is the time in our lives when that age difference is going to matter for anything. Once I turn 21, who cares?
Doesn't matter.
But for now, you actually have legal rights that I don't.
The power.
Yeah.
Dana is taking full advantage of those.
24/7.
She's just got, actually, you know those pumps that they give people who have diabetes? She's got one of those, but she fills it with alcohol.
Every
so she's
morning.
Just drunk all of the time.
Yes.
That's a disturbing image.
This is, of course, sarcasm, because I don't think Dana's taken hardly any advantage of it, except for when I, like, forced her to go to the brew pub with me.
And I drank, half of...
And she drank half of a beer at the pub, because it was so strong. I mean, it's like 5 or 6%. It's pretty strong beer, and pretty good beer. But
local beer.
It's local, microbrewed. But, oh, geez, she drank half of it, and was just like, oh, I'm just... Just feeling a little bit tipsy. I'm just gonna slow down. It is really good though, and I'm like, it's okay, Dana. I understand. You've never really drinking.
I hate that word.
You've never had beer before, right. Really. So I can understand. And then my boyfriend ended up, finishing it off for her.
Yep, in 1 second. Took me like an hour.
I struggle with the past tense of drink all the time. And in all the years of being indecisive when it comes to drinking, I haven't once actually sort of, looked it up and figured out what the right one is.
I've been told, but I always forget. I finally figured out the Leilai one, though. This is, one second. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. William, grammar time.
Thanks. That would be my segment.
I figured out the lie and the lay one. Cause
I've had that pinned down for a while.
I can't remember. Lay, or one of them is something that you do to a different object.
Yes.
And one
is when you do yourself. And this is how I figured it out. Only humans can lie in the sense of not telling the truth. And the same is pretty much true for... people too. Humans are lying down because they can lie. And then things are laid down.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And
yes.
That's. But I have struggled with that for years, and I actively been trying to remember it for years.
The real confusion for me comes in when you consider what the, not so much the meaning of each of those, but the past tense. Because the past tense of lie, in the sense of lying down, is lay.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas if you're fibbing, then it's lied.
Yeah.
I remember, and I explained this in the first paper that I wrote for grammar class, which was not so much a paper as it was like... It was almost like a personal statement, like you would write for like a college application.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, just write about yourself and the English language and grammar and writing, etc. And it was
talk about your simplification.
Yeah.
And grammar.
And I wrote about my fixation with grammar and my knowledge of the rules and applying them whenever I can. And I wrote about this experience in the beginning of sophomore year in Introduction to Creative Nonfiction class, when my favorite thing about that professor, Gary, who has been so far on every episode of this podcast.
Of course he has. He is the center of our life and our beacon of light.
I really liked the way that he ran workshops, and I really liked that he actually called attention to some of those, like, grammar and language issues when they were, like, an issue in the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And
so, not when it was, like, something that happened once.
Right, right. When an error was happening consistently, he would be like, all right, so, you know, let's talk about this. Let's just get this out of the way. How is this done right? And then we would learn a little lesson. One day, he raised the question, like, does anybody know exactly how you use these words, lie and lay? And I was the only person to raise my hand, and I laid it out very clearly and concisely with no room for confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, yeah, you know, that's right.
I didn't expect anyone to answer. I was like, I'm going to look that up on Wikipedia.
I was looking forward to explaining it myself.
So,
steal my thunder.
although that should have been like the smallest little moment that I should not even remember now.
Yeah.
It was a really, really proud moment.
Well, you impressed Gary.
Right. So it's a proud moment. I still remember it now, and I even wrote about that little anecdote in that aforementioned grammar paper. So that's one that I've squared away. The question that I was going to direct at Dana was, Dana, how's work in admissions?
Work in admissions. Well, I give tours to people that are sometimes good and sometimes kind of terrible, and spend lots of time on the computer.
Mm-hmm. Have you run into anyone with any unusual names lately?
I have. I ran into someone just a couple of days ago whose name was...
Full disclosure, I ask because I've already heard this like 3 or 4 times. But Liz, you haven't heard it yet.
No.
So Liz is the one hearing this for the first time. Dana, please continue.
Dun, 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 dun.
And this name was No Way Jose.
You are kidding. Okay. You are making this up.
Well, I have to explain.
How was this spelled? Was it like N-O-J-E?
The first name was N-O-E, but the last name was J-O-S-E, Jose. They pronounced it No Way. I think he's actually coming here.
I wish you could see the gape in my mouth right now. I am in disbelief.
Yeah, when I first heard it, I'm not sure whether I even laughed.
Believe me.
Because I was so incredulous, and I almost refuse to believe it now.
Yeah.
Because I can't imagine anyone thinking that that's a good idea. First of all, I've never heard of Jose being a last name.
Oh, there are a few, like, that's a pretty common name.
Really? As a last name?
At least there were, like, a few different people not related with the name Jose.
As their last name?
Yeah.
Hmm. That's interesting, because I have always thought of Jose as being a really common Latino first name.
Yeah.
Never, ever, ever heard it as a last name before. And then to think that somebody would, like, see that opportunity and not just laugh it off, actually take it, and, like, give their son that... Son, right?
Yeah.
Male?
Yeah.
And that's the other thing. Like, outside of the context of the name Noe Jose, N-O-E, pronounced Noe, I imagine that being a girl.
Yeah. It was a male?
No way, Jose is a man.
No way.
I just imagine that sounds so fictional. That sounds so ripe for fiction about a boy whose parents hate him and who lives a life of just sullen disappointment and rejection.
Oh my gosh.
You know?
The other name that I saw recently that was interesting but not as good was Abbey Rhodes.
Wow. Yeah, take advantage of that. Well, I have a good one for this. I think you both have heard this before, but I'm going to tell it anyway for our dedicated listeners, probably just like our friend Louis and maybe Ian lamenting his existence for not writing a proper theme song. But
maybe he has.
When my parents got married, I guess however many years ago, they were meeting the assistant pastor. And my dad walked over to the man, and the man said, "Hi, I'm Dick Boner."
No.
His parents had named him Richard Boner. Who would do that? We have a friend whose last name is Boner.
You mean...
Boner.
It's not Boner. It's not Boner.
Mm-mm.
It's close enough.
It's one letter away and is pronounced differently, but it's really close.
Doesn't matter. Too close. This man's last name was actually Boner, and yet his parents thought it would be appropriate to name him Richard, which is abbreviated to Dick. And then, further confusing to me, why would you choose to go by the nickname Dick? Ever! But especially if your last name's Boner. The only person who get away with the nickname Dick is Dick Clark.
That's, yeah,
and Dick
that's
Van Dyke.
Right, those two people. That's a short list. And Dick Boner is not on it.
No. Dick Boner is not on it. Why?
I wonder if there is a convention and or some sort of therapy group.
For terrible names.
for people with names like Noe Jose and Dick Boner.
I almost named my daughter a terrible name. Not that I have any children, but hypothetically named my daughter a terrible name. I really liked the name Clementine because it was my grandmother's middle name, which she dropped after she got married because she would have had, like, five names or something. And so I want to name my daughter Clementine. I also really liked the name Ada, mostly actually because of that national song, Ada.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's such a beautiful name.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I'll name the girl Ada Clementine. And I just want to say, it did not occur to me until my friend Kristen said, well, you're terrible. And I was like, what are you talking about? Mind you, my boyfriend and I had talked about this. Like, I had had this in my head for a good 2 or 3 months. And she goes, Liz, 8A Clementine. And I was like, oh no. Why? Because I was so set on that. But now it's going to be Eleanor Clementine. Which means Merciful Light, by the way, which is way prettier.
That's a very nice name.
That is a nice name.
I like the names that you've chosen for your children. And I hope that one day those children with those exact names exist. And I know them. And that I am their godfather.
It's all possible. They just have to get pregnant.
To at least one of them. I mean, if there's going to be 3 or 4, there's got to be a godfather slot in there for me somewhere.
Do you want to be a godfather for a girl or a boy?
Remind me of the names. I'm going to judge by names.
Okay, so
I want to be a godmother to a girl.
We have four...
I'm already decided.
We have 4 names, 2 girls and 2 guys, assuming we're having about 2 children.
Oh, Vladimir.
So assuming that we have a girl or a boy... There's the first names for that, and the second names if we were to have the same of the same gender. However, the first name for the boy has been slightly superseded by the second name, at least for now. So, the girls... Eleanor Clementine is actually the name for if we have a second girl. The first name of our... The name of our firstborn daughter would be Deanna Bell Lee. And then it would be Eleanor Clementine. For the men, it would be... Elliot.
For the strapping young men.
For our lads that I will birth, it would be Elliot Edward and Vladimir Roland, which Kenny, my boyfriend, I sent him a picture the other day of a little boy wearing a little cap and a suspenders and a tie and a nice brown overcoat. And I said, look, it's little Elliot. And he said, who? And I said, our future child. And he said, oh, you mean Vladimir.
Based on those names you just told me, and based on my limited forethought about it in the last 30 seconds or so, I would rather be a godfather to a girl of yours than a boy of yours.
Okay. That's legit.
We could both take a girl.
Yeah.
You can be a... See, the thing is, I'm so attached to the name Deannabelle Lee because I think it's so beautiful, mm-hmm. but at the same time, the meaning of Eleanor Clementine, which would be merciful light, not exactly, Eleanor means light, Clementine mm-hmm. means mercy, like clemency, basically, mm-hmm. not like the fruit, which is how I always think of it. But that's just too poetic for me to get over right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I just gotta let it gel.
I like Elliot Edward too.
Yeah, I like that too.
It's a very nice name.
I have to be honest, I'm not too keen on either of your boys' names.
Oh, really?
I think they sound cool enough, but not enough to actually like put into practice.
Well, Elliot Edward came from my boyfriend's middle name and his dad's middle name, and then his grandfather's name
right.
was Edward, and so he's continuing the tradition. We just love the name Elliot because I think it's
yeah, I
like
the name Elliot a lot too. It's a nice name, and I don't know any Elliots.
I knew one Elliot. He was a drummer for one of my favorite bands, and very handsome, and turned out to be sort of a dick.
He's always as handsome.
Yeah, he was a great drummer though. I just always get confused as to how many L's and T's I should use.
And I just don't know whether Vladimir is a sensible name for anyone in our modern world, unless it's like you're born into... Unless it's cultural, you know?
I think it's cultural.
Unless, like, you...
To the life of Penny Lace's mind.
Unless mother and father are Russian or Romanian or something. So, like, I knew a Vladimir back in grade school when I didn't have any real friends. I just had classmates who I thought of as friends.
Yeah, you were like, they're all my friends.
Yeah, and then I went to high school and realized...
I'm not tall yet.
What friends were.
Yeah, what having a friend meant. And yes, I was tall.
Oh, were you one of the tallest? You still haven't... I've been begging young William here to bring in baby pictures of himself.
Oh, yeah.
But I suppose I wouldn't have anything to compare you to since you're the... youngest of one.
No, I was born pretty big, and I was always...
You were born tall.
Yeah, I was a tall baby.
William emerged from his mother's womb at 3'2" tall and kept growing.
Already the size
there.
Of a hobbit.
The doctor held me up like a fish. He took a picture. No, I was big for a baby. Not the biggest I've ever heard of. I've heard of larger nightmares. but I was a big one and always the tallest in my class until high school when there were like a couple of guys who could sort of rival me, but it was still close.
Did you ever battle them?
There was one
battle of tallness.
There was one battle?
No.
Yes.
Yeah, there was one epic battle. Swords and axes and flares.
But actually, they were just reaching for those things, and Will reached higher.
No, there was one kid named Pete in high school who was about as tall as I was, and the issue of who was taller was never completely resolved in my mind. We were in the same Latin class in freshman year, and we would compete over a particular seat in the classroom. Which
you didn't have assigned seats?
Nope.
Oh, that's because you went to a snooty patootie school. I keep forgetting.
I don't see how those two things are related.
Because they're so much more liberal. You can like do whatever you want. You know, go out for lunch.
I guess, although that's a privilege, not a right, and it's extended to only a few. Not all the students. Seniors.
We were confined to our school like a prison because I went to public school. We needed a pass to go to the bathroom, and if you were caught in the hall without a pass, you were sent to like detention or something.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we had something called the tardy tank for the 4 years that I went there.
What's it called?
The tardy tank. That was the official name as far as I'm concerned. They referred to it as the tardy tank on the announcement.
Did they put you in a tank?
If you were...
Was there a shark in it?
Yeah.
Yes. No.
Sharky tardy tank.
If you were late to class by any amount, technically, the teachers, like, if you were somebody who wasn't usually late to class and you walked in, like, 2 seconds after the bell rang, they weren't going to, like, send you off. But if you were late to class, instead of going to class, you went to the tardy tank. So you missed class, sat there for, you know, 40 minutes or whatever, 43, I guess, or 42, however long we had to have, considering a 45-minute cycle with the time in between, and write essays about whatever the essay of the day was. My friend Mike, who did a lot of drugs and drinking, just completely skipped, I think, all of his AP Euro class senior year, but he didn't actually need it to graduate, and so it didn't affect him any. I still don't know how that worked, though. He would often go to the tardy tank just because he liked the essays. And one of the essays was, "Who is your hero?" And he said it was something about Joan of Arc, Joan of Arc's armor, and how it killed the Dixie Chicks. These essays were not legitimate at all. They also made you, quote-unquote, call your parents, which was what most people did, was called their own cell phone, which is in their pocket on silent, and just left a message like, "Oh, I was late to class, so I'm in the tardy tank." But the thing was is that you could go there 3 times a semester before, or not a semester, it was quarters, a marking period, before you got detention. And so kids would plan when they were going to go to the tardy tank and miss class. It was ridiculous. It was stupid because it didn't mean anything. All it meant was that you missed class, which just made it better for you half the time. And eventually, basically just turned it into a study hall.
Did you have to, like, hand in the essay when you were done with it?
It was a ridiculous situation. Obviously, I never went to the tardy tank. But I don't think it wasn't graded or anything. It wasn't ever shown to anyone. It was just something that they created for you to do. Mike's Joan of Arc essay he posted in the gifted room, ironically, because he was gifted.
Okay, I still have questions. I understand you were never sent there, but did you ever go there or at least see it?
No, it was like, well, I mean, it wasn't like a cage or anything. It was just a normal classroom.
Okay, that's, my next question was, what is it?
It was like a classroom. For a while, it was
just an empty room.
It was an empty room that,
with no one monitoring it?
It was also where the kids who had ISS were, apparently.
ISS?
Wow. Will, do you know what ISS is?
Nope.
Guys, in school suspension?
Oh. I know what a suspension is, but I've never had to use that abbreviation.
There were two kinds of suspensions in public school, which Dana should know about.
Oh, yeah.
ISS and OSS. ISS was the less of a punishment, but also worse of a punishment. OSS was more of a punishment, but also better of a punishment. ISS was...
So, ISS was like... ISS was like you wouldn't want it because you had to go to school, but it was the punishment for less severe things.
So, like, if you... having a cell phone in the state that we live is... in public school is... the state that I live, not the state that Will grew up in, is... illegal, because originally the only people who had cell phones for a very long time were drug dealers, because they were the only ones that could afford them.
Wait, in school or in class?
In school. Okay. At all. The actual rule, like, not a rule, the actual law is that you're not allowed to have them in school.
Okay, because in my school, it wasn't like this when I was there, but now they're allowed to have cell phones as long as it's during lunch or between classes.
Wow. See, I think that's technically illegal.
Oh.
But the thing is that it's such
get some people in trouble.
It's become such a ridiculous rule because students have them anyway. And also, it's pretty practical for students to have cell phones, especially if they have after school activities, to be able to keep their parents updated as to where they are and what they're doing if something gets canceled, etc. Especially since we don't have payphones, at least at my school, readily available. So you got like automatically 3 days ISS if you got caught with a cell phone.
Wikes. I just said wikes. I think I combined wow and yikes. Wikes,
Liz. That's nothing like what you feel.
So for something like having a cell phone, maybe getting into a bit of a scuffle instead of a large scuffle, you'd get a day of ISS. Maybe talking back to a teacher or something.
Okay.
For something bigger, you get OSS. Out of school suspension. So getting into a big fight, hacking into the computer and changing your grade.
Oh, I knew somebody who almost got kicked out of school for...
Really?
It wasn't grade changing, but it involved hacking.
Yeah, that would have been OSS.
That was a big deal at my school for a while.
But I definitely knew a few kids that got, you know, a week's worth of OSS. But, I mean, looking back on it, those punishments just seem ridiculous. Like, you're making a kid come to school who isn't doing well or who did something wrong to sit in a room and not go to class? Like, okay, yeah, they don't get to see their friends or whatever, but at the same time, like, they had to do their schoolwork, but, like, at the same time, you're just boring them. Like, that's not really teaching them anything. And the same with OSS. Like, yeah, you have to make up your work, but really you're just missing all of your instruction, which, I mean, I suppose was less important when we were in high school because the time periods were so small, like, you can only fit so much into each day. But, like, now that I'm in college, it's like, if I miss a class, it's like, I feel like I miss so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was the tardy tank. And ISS.
So the tardy tank was a classroom.
Yes, and it was also where the ISS kids were, but mm-hmm. it wasn't called going to, like, you weren't going to the ISS room, you were going to the tardy tank.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I was actually talking about with some of my coworkers today, just passing the time, was if anyone had ever gone in detention or suspension or gone close to any of those things.
Yeah.
Had they?
Have you?
Oh, me?
God, no. Of course not.
Well, that leads me into what I was about to say. Was did I ever tell you about detention at my high school?
No.
Did I ever tell you what it was called? Or
no.
Okay.
Was it called something as equally as hilarious as tardy tank was?
You tell me how hilarious it is, Liz. Detention, which it basically was, was called JUG. Capital J, capital U, capital G.
That sounds like something that should have t-shirts.
Would you care to wager any guesses as to what that acronym might stand for?
Jurisdiction under guidance.
You got the under right. Justice under God.
That makes it sound like there's, like, lightning bolts.
Let me tell you. No.
Job is like the teacher that keeps him under control. He's like, let me tell you about some JUG.
For me, JUG was basically detention, where I don't know exactly what detention was like in other schools, but from what I saw in my 4 years there, if you got JUG, which you might get 15 minutes, you might get half an hour, you might get an hour, you might get a whole week or something. Normally, what would happen is you would have to report to a certain room on the third floor as soon as all the classes were over for the day. And you would have to sit there, and the dean or the assistant dean would be there to...
You had a dean? See, this is what I mean when I say you went to a snooty, pooty, patooty school.
Fair enough. I understand it was snooty and exclusive. I make no bones about that. So the dean, who was a great guy, who mm-hmm. I really liked, or the assistant dean, who was a jerk, who I really didn't like, would be there to watch you and make sure that you didn't do anything. You'd make sure you didn't talk to anyone around you.
Or, like, play on your Game Boy.
Right. Or go on your cell phone. Or, if you weren't just sitting there bored out of your mind, then they would put you to work a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
If they had a little chore that needed to be done, a little cleaning here and there, move these chairs, set up these chairs, something like that, they might just have the kids who got JUG do it. Fair enough. My only experience with that was for the longest time, for freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, most of senior year, I was very, to answer your question, Dana, mm-hmm. I was very fixated on not getting JUG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ever. As was I. Well, not JUG, but any form of discipline.
There was a particular teacher in the theology department. Is that snooty enough for you? We had a theology department.
Well, the fact that you had departments.
Yeah.
I mean, we just had teachers. And I mean, I suppose that some of them taught the same subjects, but they weren't departments.
We had departments, and each department had their own resource center. The resource centers were the rooms where all the teachers in that department would have their desks, and also students could go in there wherever they want, whenever they wanted, because they were like...
We just had classrooms.
Yeah, we had classrooms.
There were no offices or anything.
Offices.
Well, I mean, not everyone had an office, but, like, the principal had an office, the dean had an office.
We had the faculty lounge.
Guidance counselors had offices.
We had a few faculty lounges, actually. The guidance counselors had offices.
Yeah, we had those.
But we had resource centers, and that was exceptional. There was this one particular teacher, I'm going to call him Mr. H, in order to not use his name.
Until you accidentally blurted out like I did.
But I will edit that out if it happens. I had him for theology in sophomore year, and this guy, one of my favorite teachers of all time. Love him. Big, sort of grandfatherly, except not that old. Grizzly Adams, kind of a beard, almost had a Santa Claus aesthetic.
Jolly.
Had a really booming, deep voice, and jolly when he wanted to be, but also very intimidating. Because if he yelled at you, oh my god, would that get your heart racing? One of the great things about him was that every once in a while we would have class and he would feel that we deserved a break. And rather than lecturing or leading a discussion, he would get up in front of the class and say, I used to be able to quote this word for word. I might be paraphrasing it now, but I'll try to get it right. He would say, you may ask me for the next 40 minutes or however long class was, you may ask me any questions within the bounds of good taste and my knowledge. and for 45 minutes or so, we would ask him, you know, about, we would ask him about his favorite movies, about news and current events, and just find out his likes and dislikes and his opinions on stuff and etc. Or if we had questions about, you know, theology, we might pose them, but that rarely happens. The other thing about this guy was that he went to the school. He was a student. Mm-hmm. He was an alum of the high school. And so one day during one of these question-asking sessions, somebody asked him, did you ever get junk when you went to school here? And he said no. He said no. In 4 years of being here, I never got a minute of junk.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody asked him, like, did you ever do anything that, like, broke the rules and you should have gotten junk for it, but you didn't get caught? And he said, yes. He said, yes, I committed juggable offenses. But he wouldn't say what, specifically.
Mm.
Point being, once I heard that, it became my mission to be like him and to never get a job in my 4 years.
Yeah, the punishment in school that I remember most, because we didn't really have anything that exciting in high school, is mostly like what you're describing. But in elementary school, I wish I remembered what they were called, because it was some sort of alliteration. But if we were moving from class to class, because we would go to a different classroom for reading, and we didn't sit down fast enough, or we weren't in a line that was straight enough,
yeah,
or something
so
like
stupid.
That.
Elementary school children need to walk in straight lines.
Or, you know, we didn't have our hands on top of the table or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We would have practice days. And those were usually during our snack time or during recess. And we'd have to be perfectly silent, and it was always really scary, and the teachers were so serious about it. And we would just have to, you know, get in a straight line, walk down the hallway, and sit down in our desks, and then do it over again. Over and over.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Elementary school's got the most ridiculous rules out of everything.
The other thing that I remember is there were these timeout boxes on the playground. They drew these or painted these yellow boxes against the walls all throughout the playground. And if you got in trouble, you had to stand in that tiny little box facing the wall, not looking at anybody. Which seems so weird to me now. And I feel like I got put in the box once. I can't remember why. I think it was never my fault. This is something else I was saying to some people I work with earlier. I got in trouble a few times when I was little. Like, I've told you guys the story about how I got kicked out of dance class.
I haven't heard that story.
Okay. I was, like, 3 or 4 years old.
Oh, baby Dana!
Yeah. and I have my tutu and everything. And the thing is, I wanted to do my own thing. People, or the dance instructor, she would say, do the butterfly. And I'd jump around the room flapping my arms, because that was the butterfly. And I just have this memory of sitting in the corner of the dance studio, watching everyone else do the butterfly, and I had to sit and do it on my own in the corner.
Oh, no!
But anyway, so I got in trouble then, but it was just adults not understanding me, and it happened all throughout my childhood. Actually, this will be my next memoir, getting in trouble just because people don't understand me.
Parents just don't understand. Yeah, so then you can end with a moment where you do something that you realize is your fault, and it'll be really, like, emotional, and, like, everyone will cry.
I'll have to think of something. I probably repressed it or something. But, yeah, I got put in the box. I think some other girl had done it, and she blamed me.
We had standing against the wall at recess. There was a brick wall that was the gym wall. On the other side was the gym, so it was very tall, and you had to stand against the wall. And my friend Jason, who lived down the street from me, who I actually just became friends with on Facebook, and he's doing really well, and I'm really proud of him, because he was so ADD in school. Like, he would just be, like, bouncing off the walls, and his second grade teacher would always put him on the wall for just, you know, he'd be talking too much. And this is something else that's backwards, okay? Like the tardy tank was backwards, like, have kids miss class or whatever. They would give Jason minutes on the wall because he was so ADD that he couldn't sit still in a seat. Like, this kid had to have a seatbelt put on the bus just for him, so he wouldn't be standing on the bus. And he had to sit in the very front seat. And so he's all hyper, and so they punish him by not letting him run around at recess. Totally doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But the one time, I guess his teacher always got him in trouble for not having his shoes tied. I don't know why. That's another thing. Who cares if your shoes are tied?
Yeah.
Apparently Mrs. Robinson did. So Mrs. Robinson, I went to...
Mrs. R.
Yeah, well, no, this doesn't matter. She doesn't exist anymore. Well, I mean, I don't think she's dead, but I mean, it's not like you can trace where she is, you know what I mean? Mrs., you know, here's to you, Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah, so Mrs. Robinson from The Graduate.
Yeah. I'd gone to the bathroom and then was walking out to recess, so the lines had already gone out. So I was walking out, and Jason had done the same thing, and he was a little bit ahead of me. And all of a sudden, she goes, "Jason!" And he goes, "What?" He was, like, really afraid, because I think he thought that he was going to get in trouble again, and it was just, like, not his day. He probably had 30 minutes on the wall or whatever. And she just goes, "Your shoes are tied!" And he looks down, and he goes, "Oh, they are!" She goes, "You don't have any minutes on the wall. Go out." And his face, I wish I could tell you, this boy was so cute. His face just lit up, and he was like, "Thank you," and ran outside and got to play for the entire recess, which I can tell you for a fact happened never. Like, maybe once in a blue moon. He always had at least 5 minutes on the wall.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
It's a terrible punishment. I hope they don't do that anymore.
Well, as for whether or not I ever got jugged...
Oh, yeah. Did you succeed?
That is a story conclusion for another time. I'm going to leave it as a cliffhanger.
Oh, no!
But the listeners may have to wait a week. You will have to wait a few minutes. Because we've been recording for quite a while now, and so I'm going to break this up soon. But I still want to end this episode the way that we've been ending every episode, with a particular segment.
Williams.
You know what's good?
Strip poker?
Yes. Strip poker is good. No. You know what's good is really simple. And I'm going to explain it to you, Liz, because you haven't played before.
Okay.
I'm going to shuffle the deck.
Okay.
You, because you're the guest.
Okay.
You're going to cut the deck. We're going to select a card.
Mm-hmm.
And then the suit of that card is going to determine the category.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's see if I can remember this off the top of my head. Hearts equals literature.
Love.
Diamonds equals music. Clubs equals movies. And spades equals miscellaneous.
Mm.
And according to that category, each of us is going to briefly, because this episode is already kind of long, recommend something that's good within that category.
Oh, cool.
Very simple.
Oh, so, I'm so excited.
Cut the deck, please. Spades!
What's that again?
Miscellaneous!
Oh, boy.
Oh, something that's really good. You guys go first.
It's another day for the miscellaneous category. Do you have anything to offer, Dana? I always go first. I feel like it's ladies first this time.
Well, the first thing that pops into my head, and this isn't anything that I can really recommend to anyone because it's not something you can control, but one thing that I think is good is 80-degree weather, because it's been like 100 degrees all summer, and I've had to give tours in that and walk backwards in it, and it's no fun. So today it was about 81 degrees, and I loved it. That's what's good.
Thanks. Something good for me to recommend. I'm going to be going to the beach next week, and I was just talking, I think, to William about this earlier, about how the best possible thing that I am so excited for is going to the beach when it's super hot, right? Running into the ocean. So you're in the ocean, you're playing around, you're doing that thing in the wave where you feel like you're a dolphin. And then, oh, there's so much salt in your nose. And so first off, your nose gets totally clean because salt does wonder. Saline does wonder for your nose. So that's one good thing. But the other good thing is, oh, it gets in your mouth and your mouth gets so salty.
That's what's good.
No, that's not the good thing. And it's so salty and you're so overwhelmed. So you run up to the shore. It's so hot, but you're a little bit cold because you were just in the ocean. And you crack open a Coca-Cola. It could be a Pepsi. It could be a root beer. That's what my boyfriend likes. Pepsi is what William likes, as he told me to ruin my story earlier.
No.
but that sugar, like that delicious sugar counteracting the salt, makes it the most amazing taste ever. And water doesn't cut it.
It sounds like a Pepsi commercial.
It does. It is, except for Coca-Cola, because that's what I prefer.
Or Coca-Cola.
That sounds very refreshing. Thank you. I guess it's my turn. You know what's good?
Me.
Going...
yes, Dana.
Going to the racetrack and casually betting, making small bets on horses... solely based on, like, the name of the horse or some kind of a whim.
Mm-hmm.
I say this because I'm taking a trip to Saratoga Springs with my parents for a few days while I'm not going to be here on campus in August. And we're going to go to Saratoga Racetrack. And my dad likes to take me out to the racetrack sometimes. Sometimes Belmont or... recently we went to Aqueduct, and...
is that a real place?
Yeah.
It's not just a channel for water?
No, Aqueduct, racetrack, that's a real place.
That's weird.
And I enjoy watching the ponies and just placing a few, like, $5 bets, you know, $5 is about average for my casual...
Betting extravaganzas.
Nature. And I just, you know, I look at the horses in each race and I say, like, oh, I like the name of this one. Or, like, the last time I was at the track, there was a horse named Strike a Deal. And because of Dana's last name, I bet on that horse and I wound up winning that bet.
Yeah, Dana Strike.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you have it. That's what's good. And I hope you will tune in next time to hear the thrilling conclusion of my high school detention story. So, for the Young Cast, episode 24, I'm Will.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Liz.
And I'm Gary. Oh boy, just this under God.
Huh.
Oh boy, God, what's he got to do with detention?